Welcome to the Fandom Podcast, episode 45. This is the show about the TV, movies, comics, and books that you love. Every week we give you a little bit of news and then jump into a fandom to ask the tough questions. Trying to keep the fandom separate, I am Brandon Uscio, and joining me from the Batcave is the boy wonder, Nick English.
Alfred, if we ever needed our brain power, it is now.
I'm assuming that's a quote from the old TV show.
Absolutely.
You didn't get much better than that.
No, absolutely not. It's one of my most favorites.
That's a good one. Oh, so for those of you who are listening to this as the podcast drops, we just had New Year's Day. Do you do anything exciting or fun for New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, Nick?
I just spend time with family generally, which is awesome. I actually had a really good weekend. I was actually commenting to my wife as we were coming home today that it was just a good, refreshing weekend, and I'm ready to get back to work, but I wouldn't be sad if I didn't have to.
See, I was just about to say, you're like the exact opposite of everybody else that I have talked to, who is just not ready for work to come back. They just want it. They just want another week. Just one more.
Yeah, we saw a lot of family, like pretty much all of our family, because we had a baptism in our family, and so the whole family got together for that. And then we had a soldier in our family go off, and he was going to be gone for 3 years. So we all got together and kind of wished him well and told him good luck in his service. And then we just had a party for New Year's, and I saw a bunch of my friends. So, I mean, I just had a lot of really good, you know, just got to see a lot of people, and it was really fun. I mean, it was really, really good time. And so I'll probably feel different tomorrow, but as of right now, I'm ready to go back to work, you know, just ready to get going again. I had a nice refreshing time, got my batteries recharged. So
yeah, that's, you know, that's kind of how I've always done New Year's Eve and stuff. This year I did a photo booth at the Eve SLC, the downtown celebration that's in the Salt Palace, the same building that the Comic-Con, Salt Lake Comic-Con's in. But, oh man, for 5 hours straight on New Year's Eve, I had my photo booth running, at least 5 hours.
Wow.
And I mean, we had, you know, 100 or so before that, but then we almost quadrupled the amount of photos we took. So it was a fun New Year's Eve. And then New Year's Day, my mom has continued a family tradition from my dad's side. And, you know, the Japanese culture is that you always, on New Year's Day, you always want to get together with your family and spend all the time together and have your house clean and be happy, because what you're doing on New Year's Day is going to persist throughout the entire year. So we always get together. And boy, my mom starts this open house at 2 o'clock, where when my grandma did it, she started it at 6 a.m. So it's nicer to do it at 2 p.m., but she starts the open house at 2 p.m. It goes to 8 p.m. and we had about 250 people show up. And
wow.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, but like you were saying, it's a lot of fun to see. You know, I've got family friends that we only see once a year really anymore. Kids that, you know, people that my dad worked with who, you know, their kids and I, we would get together at my dad's company picnics and stuff like that. And now I see them once a year on New Year's. So I think this is a good time of year to spend time with family and to kind of look back at what you have done in the past year and what you want to do in the year ahead. This week on our podcast, we're going to be talking about, you know, the lessons that we have learned from the past and some of our favorite things that have happened in this past year, geeky and otherwise. So we're looking at getting some new organization set up and getting some things in the way so that you know what to expect from us week in and week out. One of the things we're looking at is changing the date that this drops from a Monday to a Wednesday to give us a little bit more time to prepare some evergreen content for you. So whether you're listening to this a year or a month down the road, you can still find something interesting in it. Another thing that we want to do is we want to do some more how-to fandom-related things. So if you have any suggestions, feel free to let us know. Also, if you absolutely hate the idea of us changing our drop date, let us know that too. I'm here for you guys. Both of us are here for you guys. We want to know, we're doing this because we want you guys to have some form of entertainment. So send us some feedback. Our email is feedback@fandompodcast.com. or you can just head over to fandompodcast.com/contact and drop us a message there. Let us know what you think about when to drop the episode and what kind of content you would love to see on this, what things you would like us to cover. All right, so jumping into our top news stories this week, the very top news story, and this, I mean, this has been crazy. This has been 3 weeks now of this being the top news story, but Star Wars is just making all sorts of records, and I'm sure you guys are hearing, you know, every day it's breaking a new record.
Beat Titanic.
Yeah, beat Titanic. I believe that this weekend it's pegged to beat Avatar for the third weekend highest grossing. So all
and
sorts.
It's like fourth on the all time with inflation included or something like that. Because Star Wars is still number two and Gone with the Wind is number one.
That's crazy.
Include inflation. I don't remember what the third one is. Now that I'm, but
I don't know the inflation numbers, but it's kind of fun. So I teach a class of 10 and 11 year olds, and a couple of them haven't seen Star Wars yet, but they really want to. And one of the things that they have, that one of them said, is he was mad at us because many of us in that class have seen it multiple times. And he's like, I try to go, but every time my dad says, oh, I've got time to take you, it's sold out. It's your guys' fault because you've seen it more than once. You need to let us who haven't seen it yet go see it.
That's
funny. So aside from the money-making news, George Lucas, boy, his PR team has got to be, it's just got to be all over the place right now. They
pulling their hair out.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned this a couple weeks ago, Nick, that he's got a team saying, I don't care how much you hate it. You say you like it. A couple weeks ago, just before the movie started, and it was an hour into the interview, so that gets a little hard and difficult. But George Lucas told Charlie Rose in an interview that he felt like he sold Star Wars to some white slavers, which didn't go over very well with the internet as a whole.
Well, and just comparing anything to white slavers is a big no-no. Like, absolutely, just don't touch it at all. Like,
not even a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, like 39 and a half foot pole, Mr. Grinch style. Like, you just don't do that. It is bad. So, I don't get it. I wonder if it's kind of like one of those Tiger Woods things where he's just completely off his rocker and doesn't understand the world, and so he just thinks that the world revolves around him so he can say whatever he wants and it's not gonna matter. I don't know, like, it's just weird. I don't get it.
So the best that I can figure is that George Lucas is used to being the god of the Star Wars universe, and he is really having a hard time now not being able to dictate where things are going and how this story goes, because I mean, this has been part of his life for 40 years.
And it's his calling card. Like, it's what has made him famous and what his identity basically is. I mean, yeah, he's a movie maker. Yeah, he's made some really good movies. But if anyone says George Lucas, they say one thing, and that is Star Wars. And that's automatically where you go. And so I can see that it would be difficult for him.
Yeah. And I feel for the guy, but at the same time, he got $4 billion out of the deal. I'm sure he had to give some to other people, but he got $4 billion out of the deal.
Yeah.
So
I can't even imagine
having $4 billion.
Like, yeah. No, can't even imagine.
I'd be very, a very happy man.
I definitely have a better microphone set up for the podcast.
No, I'm kidding. Oh, we all would. Okay, so moving on to the next story. This is not Star Wars, but Star Trek. Star Trek Axanar has been given a cease and desist and is being sued for their fan film that they are doing by Paramount and CBS. Paramount and CBS own the rights to Star Trek, and so it kind of makes sense that they're doing that, but their complaint says the Axanar works infringe plaintiff's works by using innumerable copyrighted elements of Star Trek, including its settings, characters, species, and themes. So I think that the biggest reason why they're getting sued is because they went to Kickstarter and they got over $1 million from Kickstarter. Do you think there might be any other reasons, Nick, why CBS might be going whole hog into them?
So the very first Comic-Con, we were actually in the same panel. I remember seeing you in the panel about copyright law. We both went to that.
That was my first panel ever.
Yeah. I don't know if it was my first either. It probably was, because it was really early on And I remember seeing you there. I was like, hey, how you doing, Oosh? And this was long before we started doing this. Right after that, I kind of went, you know, if I wanted to have a booth at Comic-Con, what could I do or what couldn't I do? And I left that pod, or not podcast, sorry.
You know, stick a microphone up there. It's about the same thing.
Yeah. I left the panel, and I immediately went out and started talking to artists. I went out and I said, well, how do you feel about copyright? Like, because it was like on my mind. And basically in that panel, they said that 95% of the artwork being sold at Comic-Con was breaking copyright law. Like, we basically just learned that. And so I was interested to see what artists felt about that. And I had actually just started like reading a lot. It was kind of when Stan Lee and a lot of the creators of comic books were trying to get rights back from Marvel. And so there's like this big lawsuit going on. You know, like the creator of Ghost Rider was trying to do, I don't remember exactly what it was. So there was a big buzz in the comic community, and they were all really scared that any of the characters that they had drawn, so like if they had drawn their version of Superman, that they were going to get sued, you know, by DC or by Marvel or whatever. And so there were a lot of comic book like guys that were just trying to get into the business or were just doing like fan art and stuff like that, that just stopped altogether drawing any character that was recognizable because they were afraid of what was going on. And so I went and asked this one guy, I can't remember his name right now. I was just chatting with him. So I asked him, how do you feel about that? Like, how do you feel about, you know, copyright law? And he said, the only people that have ever given me any flack or have ever called me or anything were the people from Star Trek. And they have a reputation for that. They have a reputation for, you know, seeking out artists and stuff like that and telling them to stop stuff. So when I heard this story, I said, okay, well, that, you know, ties in completely with what I've heard in the past, is that they kind of have a reputation for doing that.
Oh, see, I didn't know about that reputation. And that's good to know, because part of what I was thinking was, well, they've announced their new TV show that's going to come out, and maybe now they're feeling like, oh, we have to defend our intellectual property on TV again.
Well, and that's probably has something to do with it too. Like, that wouldn't surprise me if that's what it had to do with as well. But yeah, it was interesting. And this guy wasn't just like Joe Blow. Like, he wasn't just a random guy. Like, it was one of the people that they announced, and they were like, this is a cool thing. And like, his answer to most of the other stuff was like, well, they contacted me to draw this stuff, and I've worked for Marvel, and I've worked for, you know, Paramount, and I've worked for these people, and so I don't feel bad about drawing them. But specifically, even though he was hired by them to draw something else, when he started drawing other stuff, they even went to him and said, hey, you should stop doing that.
Really?
And so, yeah, it was interesting to me. I was like, oh, well, that's weird. And I mean, it's obvious that most artists just don't care about it. You know, I mean, it's such a like slippery slope. I don't know, slippery slope, but it's so gray. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, you just do it until you get your hand slapped, and then you just take it down, and it's no harm, no foul, you know, like,
yeah. Yeah. So usually they start out with a cease and desist. And you know, Disney, who now owns the rights to Disney and Marvel and Star Wars, they're pretty good about turning a blind eye to the conventions. However, I do know people who have had booths at like the mall with the vinyl cutters, and they had like Tinkerbells and Mickey Mouse decals and stuff like that. And Disney did not like that very much, and Disney actually put a stop to them selling those. So, it really just depends on who you are, where you're doing it, and the mood of the parent company at the time, it seems.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've always been really worried about stuff like that whenever I've created artwork, but...
See, and you might have to worry about that because you're good. I did a booth, and I didn't have to worry about it because my stuff was garbage.
No, you had some awesome stuff. Don't cut yourself short, dude.
Oh, I need a lot more work.
We still have a lot of magnets that we love.
Oh, good.
That we have on our fridge, and value them.
So, okay. So, moving on.
I've got my Boy Wonder one. I've got my Robin symbol.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Those sold really well. It's kind of interesting. In Utah, Robin sells really well. I was talking to a bunch of the vendors at the last Comic-Con, but anyway, that's not what we're talking about. So,
Okay. Yeah, we can talk about Robin another day. I've got a lot to say about him.
Yeah, we could probably do a podcast, and I could probably just sit back and take a lunch or something.
Yes, I like Robin. What's his name? Richard Graydon? Graydon? Is it
Graydon? Yes. I think it's Dick Graydon, actually, though.
No, it's Tim Drayson, right?
Drayson, that's right. Wow, we're going down a rabbit hole now, real quick.
Todd Drayson. Now we just combined three of the Robins. How about that? How about Damian Todd Drayson?
It's middle name. That makes sense. D. Todd Drayson. Okay. There's some fangirl yelling at the screen right now. We better stop. Okay. So, all right. I think, you know, the intellectual property, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, CBS Paramount is in their rights because it's directly a spinoff of Star Trek. However, a lot of other studios have let things like that slide, but $1 million is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
it'll be an interesting precedence too. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out and what happens, because it will also discourage other people from doing things. And so, I mean, that's kind of sad too, because, you know, there might be some really cool stuff that somebody comes up with and then they're discouraged not to do it. I mean, I kind of feel that way too. Like, as an artist, I hold back on some stuff because I'm just like, even though this is an awesome idea, I don't know if I'll get in trouble for doing it. So,
yeah, it's like we said earlier, it's a toss of the dice. It really depends on the way the wind is blowing that day. So,
yeah.
Okay, moving on to our third story from the top news. We've got the Black Panther, Kevin Feige, Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum. he's come out.
I don't know how to say it.
I should really...
Feige.
Feige. Is that
F-E-I-G-E.
Feige. Okay, I'll go with Feige. Sure. I should pull up a YouTube video of him saying it one day. I'm sure it exists. If you listening know of a YouTube video where he pronounces his name, send it to me, because every podcast that I listen to pronounces it differently.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're going to go with Feige for right now until one of our awesome fans sends in a YouTube clip of him pronouncing his name. But so he's been on the press junket a little bit for Captain America Civil War, and he has some of those interviews, he has said that Black Panther will be a big geopolitical action adventure film. And I'm kind of excited about that. I really liked how Marvel did the Captain America film and made it kind of a spy thriller. So now imagine that, but instead of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra, you're talking about the royal family of Wakanda, or how did they say it in the movie? Wakanda, you know.
Is that what they're saying? Wakanda?
No, they were making a joke at the way that it was pronounced. They were like, "How do you say that?" Kind of how with just Kevin Feige. Like,
what the heck? Because I haven't seen any trailers or anything. So if they're saying Wakanda,
I'm thinking about Age of Ultron. So in Age of Ultron, there's the scene where they're trying to figure out how to pronounce that.
Wakanda.
So, but
I'm really excited for this movie.
Yeah,
and I think too. I think it's cool how they're just like not being formulaic with each one. So like Ant-Man was like a heist movie, and you know the first Captain America was this like political like America pro America like thing, and then the second one wasn't anything like that. It was kind of like anti-government and stuff, like,
but that's kind of how Captain America has always been. So I really dug that.
I mean, all of the movies are different, like each one has a different kind of feel to it and stuff, and I think that that's good. I think that's how they keep it fresh, and I think that's why people are continuing to do it. So it's just a really good battle plan.
Yeah,
I think so.
You know, no, I completely agree with you. There, most of the movies, not all of them, but most of them have started out with big mystical object gets taken by bad guy and good guys have to go get the object. And I mean, that's kind of, you know, you've got the ether, you've got the cube. What's the cube called? All of a sudden, my mind just
Tesseract.
The Tesseract. You've got the Infinity Gem that is in Guardians of the Galaxy. So, anyway, they do that, but it's all in such a different style that even though it's the same story, it's very entertaining to see how they do that. I really am thrilled about the fact that he's come out and said that Black Panther will have a primarily African-American cast. And
Well, if it's going to be in Wakanda, it better.
Well, that's something that as a non-white person, I notice a lot is the whitewashing of casts. The movie 21, actually that entire cast should have been Asian. That entire team, the one about the group from MIT going and counting cards in Vegas should have been Asian, but they decided to make them mostly white except for the exotic Asian girl.
The cute Asian girl, you know.
Yeah, so, you know, that's one of those things that bugs me, but I'm excited about this. I'm excited about the fact that Marvel's doing it because Marvel kind of gets away with whatever they want right now. George Lucas went on The Daily Show back when he had his Tuskegee Airmen film come out, and he said that it was extremely hard to get any studio to pick it up, even with the name George Lucas. Well, maybe it's because the name George Lucas was attached to it.
he's a little bit happy. He's a little bit more confident in his name
than
everyone else in the world.
But he was saying it was really hard to get it picked up because there were really no white characters. There was one, but it wasn't a huge one. And I really enjoyed that movie. That was one that I thought George Lucas did a good job telling a historical perspective on. I don't know exactly how accurate it is, but I liked it a lot. And so the fact that Marvel's doing this cast of primarily African Americans, it's cool. And then not only that, it's going to be kind of the centerpiece for the Infinity War, for the next Avengers film. So we're seeing the mantle passed off from the Captain America and Iron Man central to the themes of the Avengers to Black Panther and Wakanda being central to the themes. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it should be awesome. I'm excited too.
Okay. So this is the point in the episode where I take a quick break and let you know that we are so glad that you spent some time this week to listen to us and to indulge in our geeky ramblings, basically. If you find any value from this, we really would love if you could support us. And support doesn't necessarily mean monetary support. There's lots of different ways, whether it's writing a review on iTunes or subscribing or, you know, just telling a friend about this podcast, sharing our Facebook posts. Any little thing like that will help us out. So if you want to see a list of ways that you can support us, head over to fandompodcast.com/support, and I will have a list of ways that you can help us. Now, if you want to give to us monetarily, we are all for that. There are costs behind running a podcast. However, we understand that it is something that is not feasible for a lot of people. Times are tough. I get that. So if you want to help support us in a non-monetary way, head over to fandompodcast.com/support. Okay, and so, like I mentioned earlier, we're open to changing some of the format and structure of this show. So if you have any fandoms or topics or really anything in general that you would like us to cover, go ahead and send that to us at fandompodcast.com/feedback or head over to facebook.com/fandompodcast. That's another great way to get in touch with us. Okay, Nick, let's learn a little bit of history. Why don't we start with, I'll let you start this one off. We're going to talk about some of our favorite things from 2015, do a look back and learn a little bit of history. So Professor Boy Wonder, how about you take us away with this, with your first pick from this year?
All right. So, when I was looking back at 2015, the first thing that I thought of was I wanted to, pay tribute to the people who had passed in 2015 that had an influence in my fandoms. And there were actually a bunch as I was thinking about it. So I'm just going to say that a few people that passed away in 2015 that had a profound effect on my life as a geek and things that were dear to my heart. And the first person I'm going to talk about is Leonard Nimoy. I mean, obviously, he was a big part of Star Trek, and it was a tragic death that he passed away, and I just wanted to thank him, you know. I mean, I don't want to tear up or anything. The next person that I was going to talk about was Rowdy Roddy Piper. If you don't know who Rowdy Roddy Piper is, he was a WWF, now WWE, wrestler in the 80s. He was kind of known as the crazy guy, and he was just entertaining. When I was a kid, I mean, even still to this day, I watch wrestling with my buddy Blake. He has Down syndrome, and we just get together all the time and watch wrestling, and I have a really good time hanging out with him and watching it. And so when Rowdy Roddy Piper died, like, he was crying, and it was kind of fun to, you know, be with him and realize how much of a profound effect he had, you know, because I mean, this, he loves wrestling so much that he literally watches it all the time, and it's the thing that he loves the most. The last one would be Yvonne Craig, who actually was Batgirl on the original 60s. It was kind of funny when they introduced Batgirl to the show, because it was kind of an attempt to refresh the show. Anyone who actually has, like, watched or tried to binge watch, you know, Adam West's Batman, there's a reason that you shouldn't do that. It's so formulaic that, like, literally every episode is pretty much the exact same thing. It's, you know, the first half of the episode, Batman's going after the guy. He gets himself in a pickle. Then they say, next bat time, next bat channel, you know, same bat time, same bat channel.
Same bat and format.
Then, yeah, same bat format. And then he figures out some incredible way to get out of it, you know, at the beginning of the next episode. And then he miraculously comes up with something that just comes out of nowhere. And then he beats him, you know. And so it's part of the reason I love it. But you have to, like, kind of get past that. And so after two seasons and, you know, a ton of episodes, I mean, these weren't 12 episode seasons. They were, you know, a lot. I don't know how many, but I can't remember. But in the third season, they attempted to kind of refresh the show, and they brought in Batgirl, and it was just kind of silly. She's really funny, and I like it, but I was sad of her passing. And then the last one is not really anyone that affected me personally, because I don't love this type of, I don't love horror movies, but Wes Craven also passed away, who obviously was the, you know, the king of horror is what they would call him, basically.
Freddy Krueger.
Yep, Freddy Krueger. And he was a big part of the 80s monster movies. And so a lot of people, you know, consider him a genius. So that was the first thing that I thought of, to look back at 2015. Do you have anything to say about any of those people?
Well, you know, like you said, there were a ton, and so you grabbed a few. I thought about this as well, and I realized that there were so many that just we lost this year. And you know, we've talked about some of them on past episodes. We talked about, mentioned Wes Craven and Leonard Nimoy, and how, you know, they've influenced our lives. Even though, like you said, I'm not a huge horror guy, but Wes Craven has really set the tone for a lot of it. The one name that you didn't put on there that I would probably add to the list, just because he has been in so many of the different fandoms that I have loved over the years, is Sir Christopher Lee. Just to name off a few of the roles he was Dracula, he was Saruman, he was Count Dooku, he played Sherlock Holmes, he also played Mycroft Holmes, he played Lord Summer Isle, he played the Jabberwocky, he played Fu Manchu, he played Death, he played Hades, he played Ramses. He was an actual bona fide World War II spy, and his cousin is Ian Fleming, and so it's rumored that he was the... Exactly. It was rumored that he was the... I had to let you finish that. That he was the inspiration for James Bond, him and Ian Fleming's stories. And, you know, so he knows several languages. You know, he's just an amazing guy. He was in a heavy metal band. So think of Count Dooku playing heavy metal. Okay. Yeah. So Sir Christopher Lee passed away this year, and we're definitely going to miss him. But yeah, I think that's the only one that I would add to that list. Cool. So since you stole a lot of my thunder there,
sorry.
Geez, you know, because you know I was going to talk about Rowdy Roddy Piper. He was first on my list.
I know, and that's why I made sure to put him at the beginning.
Okay,
but I decided that I wanted to start with the sad stuff because it's always better to end on a happy note.
Yes, definitely. Let's end on a happy note. Okay, so it looks like we both have some categories set out. We just so you guys know, planning this, I just sent Nick a text saying, hey, make a list of your look back on 2015, come up with some of your favorite geek things. And we both kind of made a list of very similar categories. We have some different things on there. So I think we're going to move on to best movies now. So Nick, you got a list here. You got a few things on here. What is your, out of the three that you have on there, what is your favorite movie of 2015?
Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
No, I mean, and it might be just because it's so like fresh on my mind, but I mean, we talked about this on the podcast. There hasn't been any other movie that I've gone to in the last 10 years where I literally felt like a little girl, like a little boy again or whatever, like just so excited to watch it. I guess I could say Batman Begins. I really was super excited for that movie too, and it didn't disappoint, but not to the same, you know, extreme that Star Wars was. And so just that anticipation and excitement and the buildup and having expectations be met, if not exceeded, you can't say that about a movie in a lot of ways. And I get a lot of the reasons why people didn't like Star Wars. I've actually had long conversations with a lot of people about it, and I get it. I'm not under any delusion that there weren't errors in the movie, but I just loved it. And so that's my favorite movie.
That's interesting. So that one is definitely on my list. I made a mental decision, because right now that's my favorite movie right now. I'm in the same boat as you, but I went the other way on my mental decision. I was like, okay, it is too fresh. I am looking at this with just too much of a fanboy. I'm not going to give this the number one spot, simply because I know that Nick's going to do that.
That's awesome.
So
you're just lucky that there wasn't like a Doctor Who movie or something, because then that would probably take the cake, and then you could have taken Star Wars back. But no, Wars.
So Star Wars is my number two, but I'll talk about it right now since we're already talking about it. Like we've mentioned in the podcast in the past, we've got the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/Star Wars chat, that has been awesome. A lot of great theories have come out. There's about 120 people in there now, and everyone's got theories and ideas, and they are all so excited to share them, and they respect everybody else's theories and ideas. I am currently working on designing the robotics for a life-size BB-8. I really want to be able to walk around Comic-Con rolling up with BB-8 with a head that moves and spins and the ball that rolls. Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Everybody would love BB-8. So I loved that film. I have a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth about it because of the marketing. Because after I talked to you about spoilers for that first time on one of those first episodes that you were on, I thought, you know what? I'm going to stop watching Star Wars trailers. And all of a sudden, I noticed all of the marketing that was going on all around me. And, you know, my mom sent home with my kids some Star Wars chicken noodle soup. And today she sent home some Star Wars cereal. And I was sitting down watching Mythbusters with my kids tonight. And there was a Buick commercial that was Star Wars themed. And it's like, really? Everybody's going to jump on this Star Wars marketing bandwagon. So that lifted a little bit of a sour taste. So I can understand why people thought that it wasn't so good in terms of marketing. However, it was a fun film. It entertained me. And one of my favorite things about good films, and I learned this from another podcast that I listened to called Hello Internet. It's a great one, by the way. They said that, you know, the mark of a good movie is that if you enjoy thinking about it even after you've left the show. And so, you know, I'm thinking about it. Star Wars chat is almost like a Star Wars apologist group at this point. Anytime anyone's like, okay, what about this plot hole? We all kind of band together to build theories up that patch it up.
It's been a lot of fun, like, reading that stuff. Like, and it's made me think about stuff that I didn't. I mean, I've only seen it once. I haven't been able to go see it again. And so it's kind of a good way for me to think about it and relive it, even though I can't go and see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and then that's
every
the thing
I've day, had, like I want to,
I've had a few people tell me that. So my number one movie for the year that I picked out is a little sci-fi movie called The Martian. And the
I haven't seen that yet. Oh, I wanted to see it. I have not seen it yet.
You are missing out.
I purposely have not read the book because I talked to Jeff, who was on the podcast before, and he said, just go see the movie first. And he also said, don't see the trailer for it because it gives away the ending.
Yes.
And so I stayed away from it completely. And then I wanted to go see it and I just never did. And I want to, I will, I'll see it. I just haven't. That's interesting. It makes me want to go see it more.
I would echo exactly what Jeff said. The movie, they had to cut out a bunch of the book because, well, some things don't translate from book to movie. But you know, The Verge, they put the title of their review is The Martian Review. Ridley Scott puts the science back in sci-fi. So on Star Wars, one of the biggest complaints is that the science is really lacking. Basically, the solution to everything is magical space wizards in Star Wars. But in The Martian,
the Force is magical, all right?
Yeah, exactly. It gets rid of, it's almost as good as a sonic screwdriver. I might have stepped over the line there. I'm sorry, Nick.
No, I agree. But okay. It doesn't work on wood. It does have its limitations.
Or does it? Anyway.
It doesn't work on wood.
I know. There was that episode, the Christmas special. Never mind. We can talk about that one later. Okay, so the thing that I love about this movie is that so much of it was possible. The author, this is one of the first books that... So I canceled my Audible account for a long time. And then I picked it back up when I was able to listen to headphones at work again. And sure. This is one of the first books that I got on my second run on Audible. And so you've got Matt Damon playing a guy named Mark Watney. And he's up in outer space and gets stranded on Mars. And so the whole movie is whether or not he can survive on Mars and make it back to Earth. And there is so much science behind it. So, like, there are... I don't want to give too much because I don't want to spoil anything for you. There are scenes where Andy Weir, who is the author, actually calculated where planets would be at certain times so that certain plot points could work. When he said there are 12 minutes of radio contact between Earth and Mars on this day of the mission, he did the math to figure out how much radio time they would have on Mars. He had so much science behind it that it was just, but it was also entertaining. And then there are some things in the movie that I think were done better than the book. And I never think that. I never think that the book was better or that the movie was better. But the Earth side stuff on the movie was better than what he talked about in the book. Because in the book, it's all Mark Watney, first person. Pretty much. There's some time spent on Earth with other characters, but it's mostly Mark Watney. And I just thought it was a great film. I loved how science came back into it. I loved how Andy Weir had to write computer programs to figure out the orbit of the Earth and the orbit of Mars and when things would match up and when he could someday in the near future send off this launch mission to make everything work plot wise in his book. And it's just amazing. It started out as a little book that was released chapter at a time on the internet. And people asked him, hey, can you put it on in Kindle format so that we can enjoy it on our Kindles? And it shot up to the best-selling book on Amazon. And so at that point, he was like, oh, I've been giving this away for free. I'm going to start charging for this. And a book, he published a book and he did the audiobook and then he did the movie. Andy Weir is kind of a pop culture sci-fi nerd hero to me right now. So if you haven't seen it, I'm not going to give away anything more, but if you haven't seen it, definitely go and see it. So that was my number one movie. And Star Wars was my number two. We talked about that. What was your number two movie, Nick?
My number two movie, because it takes a lot to make a grown man have lots of feels, was Inside Out. I thought that it was just a brilliant movie, and it's for kids and adults, and I always admire really done, well done original ideas, which Pixar seems to just come up with all the time. And they just have a way with, the animation and everything like that, and studying illustration and animation in college and that sort of stuff. I always just look for the good cartoons, and this one just was a home run. I actually didn't see it in the theaters because it came out right when my son was born, and then having a newborn baby for the first time and being a first-time father, we didn't get out much for that first long while, and then it just got to the point where there were other movies that I went to see, and I could just wait for it to be out on Redbox. So yeah, when it that first weekend it came out on Redbox, we were like, okay, well, this is what we're going to watch because we need to see this movie, and everyone's been talking about it. So I was, you know, nice and warm on my couch and cuddled up to my son, who was, you know, now 7 or 8 months old, you know, watching this show about, you know, this little kid. And I, you know, they have that little part where the very beginning when it's a little baby and it's like, goo, goo, ga, ga. And then like, they're freaking out. And there's, you know, I was just like, hey, that's just like Owen, you know, like that's probably what he's thinking right now. Yeah. So it just touched my heart. So, and I hats off to, you know, Pixar. I haven't seen Good Dinosaur yet. Haven't heard good things about it. I don't know if I'll probably wait for that one for DVD.
Yeah, my dad took my kids to go see that one just this last week, and he kind of told me, yeah, you can wait for Redbox. So that's my plans for Good Dinosaur.
But yeah, it's kind of odd that Pixar dropped the ball on it, but you know, they had to eventually, so who knows.
Yep.
But yeah, so that's my number two.
Okay, so I do not have Inside Out on my list, but I will tell you, that movie, and my sister and I get into arguments about this. That I think that movie hits you a little bit more when you have a kid than when you don't. Obviously, I've only ever seen it in the context of having kids, but I found myself being much more emotional after my first child was born. And my sister tells me that by saying that I invalidate her feelings, which I don't. It's just they're different. She still has strong feelings, and I acknowledge that. But it's different when it's your own kid. Anyway, yeah. And so that film, you know, it was a good film. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Somebody at the University of Utah has actually taken a fan edit and has cut out all of the scenes inside of Riley's head. So it kind of turns it into a short story of Riley going around and making these decisions. It's kind of seems kind of interesting to me. I haven't watched it yet, but it's one that's on my short list.
I'm interested. I'd like to see that.
Okay, so my number, I've done my number one and my number two. You've done number one, number two. My number three movie, and I'm going to steal a little bit of glory from you on this one, is Marvel's Ant-Man. And the reason why this one is my number three movie is because it's a Marvel movie, so it's been good. It is one of the most ridiculous characters in the Marvel lineup, and yet they find a way to make a good movie out of it. They found a way to, you know, let Scott Lang kind of poke fun. It's like, really, Ant-Man? Can I change the name? Or I didn't pick the name. And it was a good film. But another reason why I really liked this is kind of what I mentioned earlier. This one doesn't follow the exact same pattern as every other Marvel film. This one is all about the Pym particles and not necessarily going after an Infinity Stone. It also set up a bunch of characters really well and gave some backstory of S.H.I.E.L.D. and how it was created. And, you know, I was really worried that they were going to just kind of brush Hank Pym under the rug with it, but they did such a good job of saying, no, he's been around, he's been doing his thing, but we're just not, and he was Ant-Man, he was a superhero back in World War II, but we just didn't show you those stories. We're going to start with Scott Lang. And so that was awesome. I thought that was executed well. I thought the casting was great, and I am excited to see more Ant-Man. I am noticing that they have some of the same casting decisions in it, and it came out about the same time as The Martian, if I remember correctly. So, but, you know, the guy who knows a guy who has a friend who is dating a girl who has a cousin that knows a guy is also in The Martian. So,
Well, and I think it's very telling that both of us chose Ant-Man instead of Avengers Age of Ultron.
Well, I chose it over that because it was different, because it was new. I felt like Age of Ultron was just kind of a, same old story.
Well, and that's kind of how I felt too, because like, I mean, like I loved that movie and there were a lot of really cool things about it that, you know, I am super happy about, but I agree. I completely agree. It was underwhelming only in the fact that there was so much cool stuff going on, but there were times that I was bored. Like I was like, okay, get along with the story or, you know, do something, you know, original. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what I thought of. Like when I was thinking, I was like, well, the obvious answer would be Star Wars, you know, Age of Ultron and, you know, whatever other thing. But the more I started thinking about it, I was like, no, I don't think that Age of Ultron was the best movie of the year. It was a great movie. You know, I will watch it from time to time, but it wasn't as good as the first Avengers. It was definitely not as good as the first Avengers. And it was because it, you know, they added stuff that was awesome and that I love. I mean, I loved Vision. I liked James Spader as Ultron. I didn't absolutely love the way they did Ultron, but I get why they did that. But yeah, so I thought it was, I just thought that was very interesting. I was wondering if you would put that on there.
Yep, I sure did. You know, and that's one of those things where, like you said, Age of Ultron was part of the reason it didn't make the list is because it wasn't groundbreaking, because they did the same thing in the first Avengers. But yeah, they added stuff. There was also directorial disputes in that one where Joss Whedon and Kevin Feige just did not get along in some of the things. And they kind of held Joss Whedon and was like, hey, if you want this scene in, you have to put this scene. If you don't put this scene in, we're cutting all of these. And so,
and that's never going to make for a good movie.
Exactly. It was, it turned a lot. Yeah. It turned a lot into marketing promotion for, the Thor movie. So for Ragnarok.
Well, and when you were talking about the most ridiculous, you know, character, I immediately thought of Thor, you know, because when the first Thor movie came out, I was like, how are they going to do this? I mean, Thor is kind of silly. Like, you know, anyone who's outside of the comic book world, you know, there's this dude that is from another world, and he's mystical and magical and has this magical hammer, you know. And after that first Thor movie, and they just pulled it off, you know, brilliantly, like creating this character and not having it be completely weird, I was not worried about Ant-Man. Yes. I was like, okay, well, they did it with Thor, and Thor's kind of ridiculous. And, you know, everyone loves Thor. He's one of the coolest characters in Avengers. So, you know, I think they can do it with Ant-Man. And that was my first thought with it. So,
okay. So that's, you know, that's Marvel. I mean, in Marvel, we trust. They take really ridiculous things and they come out and make a good show for it. All right. So let's move on to the best video game looking back. And you have more on your list. I don't play a ton of video games, and when I play video games, they are mostly mobile. So why don't you start us out, and when you're done talking about yours, I might throw in some comments on one of them, just because I loved the games in the past. But I'll let you start, and then I will just chime in every once in a while.
Okay, so best video game. I haven't been able to play as many video games as I have in the past. But I was also thinking of geeky games or games, you know, for fandoms. The first one that is the obvious choice is Batman Arkham Knight. Really brilliantly done. Just a great game. I don't have an Xbox One or PS4. So I have been playing it on Jeff's Xbox One, and I actually haven't finished the game.
No spoilers.
I have to play it. When I played the majority of it, he was going on vacation, and I just said, hey, if you want, you can bring your Xbox over so I could play some Arkham Knight. And he said, yeah, that's not a bad idea, because, you know, he's a kind and awesome dude.
And you're so just saying like that because he listens.
Well, yeah, that too, but he really is. But he let me borrow it for a weekend. And so I just kind of told Lena, I was like, Lena, this is the only time I'm going to be able to play this game. Let me play.
Lock myself in the basement.
There was a few times when it was like, no, you can't play. So, I mean, I played a lot of it, but I didn't actually finish it. But yeah, it's just so well done. And the story, the thing that makes those games awesome to me, like I always play them on like easy or normal. Like I'm in it for the story. a lot of the times with video games, I want them to be an interactive movie and for me to just be entertained by it. And so, you know, some games I try to go and find everything and do everything in, but I just don't have as much time to do that as I did in the past. And so now what I look for in a game is just a good story and a fun journey. And it really has that. And, you know, being the Batman fan that I am and seeing all those little Easter eggs and things that they just add in the game is just fun. Batman Arkham Knight is the best one for me. The second one is actually another nostalgia pick for me. And it's King's Quest Chronicles. Now,
that was a good game.
Yeah, King's Quest, for those of you who don't know, was a game that was released by Sierra, and I don't know when. It's sometime in the 80s, maybe early 90s.
Yeah, I think it was early 90s.
But Sierra was the game company for me when I was a little kid. Like, all of their games were the games that I sought out, and me and my friends would play at sleepovers. And, you know, the majority of my gaming up until I was like 16, from like, you know, 10 or 12 to 16, were playing Sierra games. And King's Quest, the ones that pop out to me is King's Quest 5, because that was like when the graphics turned really good.
Uh-huh.
It was like all of a sudden, bam. And even to this day, because I quote movies and stuff all the time, I still say quotes from that game to my wife. And she just kind of nods at me. Every once in a while, I'll be like super thirsty and I'll like drink water and I'll be like, ah, life-giving water, nectar of the gods. Nick can now feel his strength flowing through him. And I don't know why I always remember that when I was a kid. And I think I added nectar of the gods just because I do
that. Why not?
Good lines. But anyway, so they came out with a new game. And I was really intrigued by it. And I was hoping that it wasn't just going to be a cash grab, like, oh, nostalgia, buy this game. But the more that I started like looking at videos of it, there were aspects of the game that made it even cooler to me. And one of them is the way that they did the graphics. So they were trying to use a different way of doing the graphics in this game. And being the artist that I am, it really intrigued me the way that they're doing it. So they used like the polygons that most people use nowadays, you know, to make a 3D effect on, you know, on an image or on a character. But instead of them just creating a computerized version and then putting that skin over the top of the polygon to make, you know, to make it look three-dimensional, they actually hired physical artists to paint and watercolor the texture for the game. And then they imported that watercolor and paint and put it on in the game.
That's awesome. I'm looking at some of the screenshots now, and it really holds true to like the feel of the classic King's Quest. What, you know, it's two-dimensional, but you can tell that it's nice and clean and crisp, and it looks good. You know, it almost looks cel-shaded, but knowing what you just said about that, obviously it's not cel-shaded, so that's awesome.
But really what holds true to this game is the storytelling. Like, the gameplay itself is just kind of like, oh yeah, this is fun, cool, blah, blah, blah. The storytelling behind it is really cool. And the one downside is that they are doing the game in the same vein as they did the Walking Dead video game that was released a while back, where they release it in chapters. So like, you can buy each chapter. And so, you know, one chapter costs this much, one costs this much. And then if you want to, you can buy a season pass that will just, whenever they release a new game or a new chapter, it will, you know, it'll automatically download because you've already bought it. So that was the only thing. It was like, dude, I want the whole game now. But I think they've released two chapters so far. And I think there's going to be five. And each of the chapters is a completely individual story.
That's
so
cool.
So it's not, you know, and it's a different idea. You can play it on your Xbox. I'm not sure if it's on PS4. I assume it is. But you can play it on Xbox 360. And it's also on Steam. That's where I got it. So there's lots of different ways that you can get it. But yeah, I would recommend it. And I have a friend, a neighbor, who I recommended it to just because I know he likes that type of like visually stunning type games and stuff like that. And I actually asked him today, I saw him today and I said, hey, I saw you were playing King's Quest. What did you think of it? And he's like, dude, that was just great. Thank you for recommending that to me. So that was my second one. The last one is kind of not one from 2015, but I think they've done so many upgrades to the game that I think it deserves recognition. Because when this game was first released, it was really buggy and it was highly anticipated. And so a lot of people were just really mad when they released it and it was just not a good game. And that is Elder Scrolls Online.
Oh, I saw now, some of the nerd rage over that. I've never played that, so... But I did see some of the nerd rage.
So the reason that it intrigued me is, you know, I played WoW and I played EverQuest, the first one. Like, I kind of got all of my friends in high school into it. I had a friend that introduced it to me. And then I was like, Dad, I got to play this game. And he's like, okay. And then I went and bought it. And then we had to get a new video card for it. My dad was like, oh, we have to get a new video card.
What PC Master game? Race. You
know? Yeah, like it was just bad. And then like all of my friends would come over and we'd literally like sleep over and sleep down in the computer room, like watching us play EverQuest. Like I created a monster, you know, by introducing this game to my friends. But, I played a lot of, you know, MMOs and stuff like that. And, once I got married, I was kind of like, okay, I can't dedicate as much time as I really need to.
Exactly.
So I can't justify paying, you know, $10, $15 a month to play this game that I'm going to play a few hours a week. You know,
well, not even a few hours a week. Those few hours a week become, you're really going to go play that game right now? You could be doing this.
And so I love Skyrim. I played Daggerfall. I played Morrowind. I played, you know, all of them. You know, Oblivion. I played all of the Elder Scrolls games. And so I was like, well, I got to try this out. And it went on sale on Steam. You know, I put it on my wish list on Steam and it went on sale and it was like $20. And I was like, okay, I can justify $20 to play this game. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to dedicate a lot of time. If it's not good, I won't feel bad, you know, like, if it's not a great game or whatever. And so I bought it and I said, Lena, I'm going to buy this game. And she's like, okay, cool. You know, and she liked the fact that I didn't have friends on the game because that, you know, like once you have friends in the game, you're like, oh, I want to play with my friend. And then you know, I'll have to like get on at the same time and stuff like that. And Lena was really happy when I stopped playing WoW. It was shortly after we got married that I stopped.
Hey, that's when I stopped playing too. You know, just after I got married, my wife was like, "You're not coming to bed again tonight."
And so with this one, I you know, it was kind of like my first, like I had been playing Star Trek Online. I played Champions Online when it first came out because it was superheroes, and I was like, "Sweet, this is awesome." But then it just wasn't as fun. Like it was fun, but I didn't have a lot of friends, and I didn't want to pay to do it. And then that one became free and I played it again for a little while. But this one, when I bought it, it was fun. Like it was really fun. And I was like, okay, this is fun to just kind of play and I don't have to dedicate a lot of time and I can play it on my laptop and, you know, it's Elder Scrolls, so it's cool. And, you know, I had my cool guy, but I just logged on again because they're giving away $1 million to people who play it.
Please come play our game.
Yeah, they're having a contest right now because they're like, dude, we're doing all of these, you know, great things to this game. Come back. And so, you know, you sign up and then anyone who's played between this time period, I think it ends tomorrow, actually. It was like during Christmas break. They were like, hey, come and play our game and get hooked again. So I was like, yeah, I'll go and play again. You know, I had kind of been playing other stuff and they have done a lot of additions to it that have made it really, really good. I mean, really just a solid MMO. And so anyone who played it initially and said, no, it sucks, I invite you to come back and play it and just try it out again. I don't think it's the best video game ever, but I just think that they are doing a lot of really good stuff to make the game better. So I'm just kind of giving them free publicity right now. because it's fun. I love Elder Scrolls and I've really enjoyed it. And if anybody wants to play with me on there, just know I won't get on a lot, but yeah, my name is August Christopher on it. That's what I always do.
For some reason, I feel like there's a backstory there, but
we'll let you get into that another time. That's one of my characters' names is August. Yeah. And it's okay. from a movie reference. So if anyone knows what August Christopher is from, put it in the show notes and we'll give you a shout out on the next podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Figure out what August Christopher is from. Bonus points if you don't use Google.
Question, and my family doesn't get to respond. Lena, you already know, so you don't get to win.
Oh, how is it worded? Employees and family members of the Fandom Podcast are excluded from entry. So, all right. So it sounds like you've had at least a couple fun games. You know, it was kind of nostalgic to listen to King's Quest. I used to play King's Quest with my cousin, and the one that I was big into from Sierra was Quest for Glory. That's my favorite one too. Yeah, that was actually the game that taught me how to hex edit saved game files on the computer. Because, you know, back then you didn't have an unlimited app store of games. You just, you know, you played what you had, and then once you were done with it, you had to find a way to make it entertaining. I love that
game because you could save your guy and play it in the next one.
See, that was really cool too. You know, it was kind of like Mass Effect thing.
That was the first time that I can ever remember doing that. Like, I don't know if there was a game before it. Like, that was innovative. And the fact that nobody figured out to do that again until, like, really Mass Effect, and it was, like, this huge deal.
But yeah, that was
just weird. It was like, yeah, well, like, when they were announcing Mass Effect, I love Mass Effect, by the way, but when they were announcing that was the big thing, I was like, well, Quest for Glory did that back in the 90s. You know, I was like, why does everyone think this is so revolutionary?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's one of those things where there's nothing new under the sun. But yeah, so the game that I've been playing the most right now, and I didn't put it on this list, but I'm going to mention it here. I'm going to give it a shout out because it didn't come out in 2015, but I downloaded it in 2015, is Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. KOTOR is kind of the code name. That came out in 2003, so we're looking 12 years back, but I downloaded it for the iPad a little after I saw Force Awakens. And the more I go through the story, I loved the game when it came out, but the more I go through the story, the more, and my brother pointed a lot of this out to me, the more that I'm starting to notice that that Bastila, the main character, is I think they took a lot of inspiration for Rey from her. So
for sure. I love that game too.
Yeah, it's a good game, and it's a little interesting to get used to it playing it touch versus on like a console, but
I didn't know that they released it on iPad.
Yeah, so it's $10 in the App Store right now, and it's just kind of they remastered some things, but a lot of it's just like the classic old one.
Well, and I have that one on my Steam list just because it's like one of those things that if it ever goes on sale for super cheap, I buy it so that if I ever want to play it again, I can. And this weekend, both KOTOR 1 and 2 were on sale for like $3 to $5.
Dang it, I should have had that on my Steam wish list.
And then you could get it on Steam. So yeah, and that's the secret of Steam. Like, don't ever buy anything at full price. Like, just put it on your wish list and then wait for the emails that tell you that something on your wish list is on sale, because they always go on sale for cheaper, and that's the best time to buy for sure.
Little Steam pro tip. Okay, cool. Okay, so those are video games from 2015 and 2003. Don't mind me. We're going to move down to the best TV series of the year. And I'm going to start out, and this one I did not do what I did with Star Wars. I am going to say that the best TV series of the year was Doctor Who. And the sole reason why I'm going to put this in here, the stories were good, the episodes were fun, but really what I think made this the best TV series of 2015 was Peter Capaldi's acting skills and the way that he just made everything feel so real. But he could also play it funny. But when he needed to play, like, if you haven't seen the Zygon Invasion and Inversion, that two-parter, go watch that and you will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it is literally some of the best TV ever.
Yeah. And
in the history of ever.
And I've started to worry because, you know, the Beeb, as they call it, across the pond, they pretty much told Doctor Who, yeah, you've got 10 more years guaranteed, which nothing's ever really guaranteed. But they pretty much said, yeah, you're set for 10 more years. And so I was afraid that they were going to just kind of rest on their laurels and do stupid stuff to get more of the masses. But boy, bringing Peter Capaldi in was probably one of the best moves that they ever did.
And well, and it was such a pivotal time, too, because Matt Smith was so beloved. Like, he was what brought Doctor Who to the U.S., really, like, with the young generation, like, the young kids, like, you know, high school, junior high, like, they love Matt Smith. And it was really hard on a lot of, you know, the new Whovians. I mean, it's kind of a joke in the Who world that you can always tell if they're truly a fan, which I don't believe in. You're a fan if you're a fan. It doesn't matter, you know, but you're a true fan if, you know, you didn't just like Doctor Who because of Matt Smith. And so it was just such a like pivotal time, I think, for them, because the ratings were just so high during the Matt Smith era, like just through the roof. And they're not as high now as they were, but they are really good because they brought in such a good actor. Like, I think people were just at first were kind of like, eh, like my nephew, like he is the prime example. When Matt Smith left as the Doctor, he was pretty much disenchanted with the show for a while. He was just like, eh, I don't really care. I just like Matt Smith. I'm just so mad that he left and blah, blah, blah. And now there's this old guy that I don't really like. And I just kind of waited it out and said, okay, all right, buddy, you know, give him a chance, you know, because it's really about the show and it's not about the actor. And it took him a little while. He watched a lot of Supernatural during that time, and he watched other shows. And then I just said, hey, you should try and watch it now that it's on Netflix again. And he said, oh, yeah, it was really cool. And he liked it now. And actually this weekend, I hung out with him and we started watching the new series because he hadn't watched it yet because he only watches it on Netflix. And he said, oh, yeah, I just love this. And he thought the Sonic Shades were hilarious. And, you know, we watched the first four episodes. I think we didn't quite get past the fourth, didn't quite finish the fourth one. But yeah, he was super stoked. We were playing video games, watching Doctor Who and having fun.
See, and that's cool. I actually think that the reason I think there were a lot of people who kind of left the fandom after David Tennant left and it became Matt Smith. And they're like, who is this goofy guy that, you know, you've got to be a teenager to appreciate. And so now all of a sudden you got Peter Capaldi, who's an older, more refined gentleman who is just extremely good at what he does. But then you also have the Sonic Shades and him riding in on the tank.
Yeah, and that was the funny thing, too, is like I said, okay, you got to watch this scene. It's really awesome. And he was just like, oh, my gosh, that's so cool. Like, he was just like, you know, he's rocking out on a guitar. And he started playing the guitar lately, and he's getting really good. Like, he's getting pretty good at it. And so, like, just adding that sort of stuff that kind of generation would love is just smart. I mean, I think it's just smart.
Yeah, I think the transition's good. They're going to bring back a bunch of Whovians who didn't like Matt Smith, and they're going to keep a bunch of Whovians who absolutely loved Matt Smith. So I think I just think, you know, his series eight was kind of a tough go at it because he was figuring out who he was. Am I a good man? But series nine just knocked it out of the park.
I honestly think there was only like one bad episode.
Same here. It's probably the same episode.
So the one with the
Mr. Sandman.
Yeah. That was the only one that was just weird.
Yeah, like, feel free to skip that one. That has no importance on the entire show.
Yeah, it literally has nothing to do with it. Like, you could literally not watch that and you would not miss anything that happens in the series. But yeah, it was just bad. And it's the episode where they tried to do found footage.
Yeah, I didn't like that. It didn't work very well.
Well, and it wasn't truly found footage.
Yeah.
If you watch the episode, you'll know what I mean. And so it while you were watching it, it was like, oh, this is the found footage episode.
But it wasn't really found footage.
Like, but this is not found footage. Like, what's going on? Anyway, sorry.
And they tried to explain it. It's fine. They tried to explain it in the episode. But yeah. Anyway, watch it if you want to, but don't expect anything from it. Okay, yeah. So those are those are a bunch of our thoughts on Doctor Who. I think we're, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago about Series 9 and wrapped that up. That was a long episode. If you wanted to listen to that, just head back in our archives a little bit.
Yeah, we probably should have done that one in one.
Yeah, we could have done the entire episode on Doctor Who. Okay, so Doctor Who was my number one. Obviously, it ranked for you. Where did it rank for you?
I can't really rank these. Doctor Who is probably number one for me too, just because it's my favorite show of all time. And last season, I probably would not have ranked it number one, but definitely this series, I just loved it. So Doctor Who's my number one, TV series for the year.
Okay, so how about you? Let us know, what's your number two?
Okay, so number two is kind of a joint effort. And you'll know what I mean after I tell you. So at the beginning of this year, everyone was really worried of what was going to happen when Netflix said that they were going to have two Marvel series that they were going to release. And that was Daredevil and Jessica Jones. And there was a lot of speculation on whether or not this format would be good. And, like, you know, the movies had been so good up to this point. And they proved that they cannot do anything wrong, apparently, by releasing Daredevil, number one, which I think was actually just totally incredible. Like, it totally had the feel of Daredevil from the comics. I loved that it was a story, kind of like why I loved Star Wars, that it was a story about the villain as much as it was about the, you know, the hero and kind of their journey and how they became who they are and stuff like that. And then, you know, following it up with Jessica Jones, which was kind of the same thing, but it was different in the fact that you didn't know who Kilgrave was and you were kind of discovering who he was through Jessica Jones, you know, releasing a little bit of information at a time. And so, like, both of the series had completely different feels, you know, and it's just so smart, like, the way that they're doing stuff, you know. And both of these shows needed a little bit more grit and needed a little bit more, you know, of that kind of feel to it. And then, you know, they announced that season two of Daredevil is going to be the Punisher, who's like the most gritty character in Marvel. I mean, he had a comic book series called Punisher Max, which had a big fat label on the front of it that said, "This is MA only. No one can buy this if you are not, you know, old enough. We're not going to let you do it because it's, you know, gory and gross." And I read it. I read some of them, and it was just too gory and gross for me, so I didn't continue. But, you know, like, that's the type of avenue that they can put on Netflix that, you know, so they can tell the type of story that they want. And so that would be, you know, my top, you know, one of my top series, both of them, of the year, for sure.
Yeah, they were both really good. Well done. Yeah, I loved them. Like you said, with Kingpin, I went into Daredevil ready to hate Kingpin. Be like, oh, this guy is the villain. Of course I'm going to hate him. And then by the end of the season, you're like, oh, that's why he's doing this. And he actually thinks he's doing a good, he thinks he's doing a good thing. And so I loved how they did that. I loved how they kind of did that with Kilgrave. You know, they gave their villains depth for sure.
Well, and that's always what makes for the best villain. I mean, it's kind of a really good, I don't know what to, like, formula to use. And even Ultron says that, doesn't he? He says all the greatest villains think that they're
the good guy.
They're thinking that they're the good guy, yeah. I mean, I guess the only exception to that rule is the Joker, because I think the Joker just doesn't care. Like, he doesn't think he's doing very good. Possible. He knows he's not, but yeah. Yeah, oh, definitely both of those series. And, you know, I mean, I think I'm probably just a broken record at this point, but.
So, like I said before, in Marvel we trust.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, yeah, I loved the grittier tone. There's some new stills that they have released from the set of Daredevil 2 or of Daredevil Season 2. I know you're not going to go out and watch those, but
I've seen a couple of the stills.
Includes, like, the Punisher.
I've seen stuff from behind. Like, I haven't really looked closely into them, but.
Yeah, there's one with Daredevil, with Matt Murdock and the Punisher. And I saw that one. I don't know anything else about it, and I thought it was awesome. So that one, those series were really good, and I really liked them. I don't know that I will be able to watch them over and over and over again like I do Doctor Who, because they are just so deep and impactful on your psyche.
Well, and ironically, this morning I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna play a little bit of Elder Scrolls Online while Owen's asleep," and I was like, "Maybe I'll put a show on just in the background to put in the background." And I turned on Daredevil, which is kind of, it might be why it's like fresh on my mind. And you know, like after getting to the second episode or whatever, and then I had to kind of stop. I was like, I didn't pay attention to that at all. And
you have to pay attention to that.
I don't really know what was going on. Even though I know what was going on, I was like, I just kind of look up and like catch glimpses of what's going on. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this and I remember that. So, you know, yeah, the first watch, you definitely have to like watch it. But like on the second watch and stuff, I was like, yeah, this is cool. Like, I wasn't as invested in at knowing everything that was going on. And so it was kind of just fun to just be like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember that, you know, that's cool. Oh, I didn't catch that the first time, just that dialogue or whatever, you know? And so I don't know. I think you can rewatch them just kind of in a half-hearted way. And they're still enjoyable.
So, as long as your kids are asleep.
Yep.
Okay. So my number two, and I'm going to cheat on this one. I see TV. We have so much good TV going on right now. If you like anything, there's something out there for you. There's a new one getting a lot of buzz that I want to watch called The Expanse. Haven't been able to do that yet. A lot of people have told me that it is the spiritual successor to Firefly. So I'm kind of excited about that. I don't know anything about it past that though.
I think I saw a preview for it, but I don't remember what it was for.
The pilot, I think, is on YouTube and stuff like that. It's a sci-fi channel, which makes me happy that sci-fi is going back to its sci-fi roots and not like reality TV like they've been doing. So my number two, sorry, bad pun. So my second pick is really, I'm going to be cheating, and I am going to say that it's a showrunner team. And it is Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg. And they, when it comes to TV, I will watch anything that they put out just because they do it well. This is the team that is responsible for The Flash, The Green Arrow, and Supergirl. And they are doing such a good job with that. They are making superheroes semi-realistic and like, why are you doing this? Now, obviously, they're superhero soap operas. Don't anybody try to say otherwise. This person died and now they came back, or that's their evil twin, or
Well, and that's kind of why I've been disenchanted with Arrow as of late, and that's why I love Flash so much, and Supergirl, is because they're a little bit less of the, you know, soap opera. I mean, there's still stuff like, do I like her, do I don't, but you know, that just adds for an interesting story. But Flash, this last season was hard for me to watch it until like Barry showed up. Yeah, like I don't know what it was about it. It just seems like, I think part of it is the fact that I love Green Arrow in the comic books.
It's Green Arrow that was hard for you to watch, not Flash.
Yeah, Green Arrow. Sorry. I don't know if that was clear. Yeah, Green Arrow. Yeah, Arrow was hard for me to watch because of just how soap opera-y it had become. And everyone's just like angry at him. And then he's like, I'm running for mayor. And it just seems like they're trying to make him Batman when he's not Batman. Like, Green Arrow is not Batman. And that's, you know, the direction they're taking him. And like, I love Green Arrow. I love Green Arrow. And I love his character. And the way that he is portrayed in that show is not Green Arrow. It's a version of him, but it's not the characteristics that I love. And that's the way I've always felt about the show from day one. But I was just so excited that Green Arrow was there, you know, and I was like, sweet, Green Arrow. And after the first couple seasons, I kind of was just kind of like, I would get caught up. Like, I wasn't like, oh, I'm super excited for this. But Flash, on the other hand, is just incredible. Like, it's really good. And it's fun to watch, and I'm excited for Heroes of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow. Sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Do you think that this season on both of the shows has kind of been a prelude to Legends of Tomorrow?
Absolutely. Like, all they're doing is setting it up so that people will go and watch that show.
Yeah. So maybe that's why the story is not quite so good in the Arrow.
Everyone's coming back. Like, it's really, she's like, oh, she's dead. Now she's back. Oh, and then now she's become Black Canary, and now there's another Black Canary. And then, you know, like, it's just like everyone is now becoming a superhero, and I don't want them all to, you know, Diggle's a superhero now. And, you know, like,
you know, I don't like his mask. I really don't like his mask. It really is not that good.
Yeah. And yeah, it just seems so, I don't know. I think that what made the show good is they're going away from that, you know. And I didn't like the, you know, I'm going to save my city and kill everyone Green Arrow either. Like, I didn't like that. Because that's not who he is. But,
you know, to be honest, I did not like the Arrow until the Flash started. And then once I was able to look at that as a lead up to the Flash, I thought it was great. And being able to binge those first couple seasons really made things a lot better on the Arrow. And I find it really funny because, like you said, everybody's becoming a superhero and having a secret identity on the Arrow, where on Flash, nobody has a secret identity. I mean, Cisco comes up with code names. But, like, Cisco's like, Barry runs in and saves the day as the Flash. And Cisco's like, hey, thanks, Barry. And Barry's like, dude, come on.
Dude. Yeah. And Cisco is probably the best part of that show. Like, I think he carries it in a lot of ways. Because if Cisco was not on it, I think it would kind of be flat. But his character definitely adds a dynamic to it and kind of a humor that's really good. Because I don't absolutely love the way that Barry is portrayed. He seems kind of moody to me in a lot of ways. And the Flash in the comics is very comical and kind of silly. And so I kind of hope that they kind of go that direction sometime, you know, but it's a minor, it's a minor disgruntled mint. I don't know if that's a word.
It is now. It's disgruntlement. Yeah. Yeah, so that's good. Since I've got the three shows in there, you know, with the Supergirl and the Flash and the Arrow, I'm going to say that those are my number 2 and number 3. And did you have anything else other than just the ones we've talked about?
I've really enjoyed Gotham this season.
See, I cannot bring myself to watch that. I have such a hard time with it.
So the first season was hard. Because I think that they didn't really know what they were doing with it. Like, it was all over the place. And I think that, bless her heart.
Oh, bless her heart.
Jada Pinkett Smith, it kind of seemed like a Halle Berry Storm X-Men situation where, like, they're like, oh, Halle Berry, we want you to be in the third X-Men. And she's like, I will only be in it if I am a main part of the story. And a main character. And that's what, like, and part of that screwed up this, you know, the show. Like, Storm is not a main character.
I would have loved, well, she takes over for Xavier, but going back to Gotham, I would have absolutely loved to have seen more of Fish and the mob story and what happened with the mob and with Jim Gordon.
I didn't like that at all. Like, I just thought that everything about it was like, okay, well, if she's not going to be a villain, like, if it's not going to be revealed that all of a sudden she is some crazy awesome villain that we all want, what's the point? Like, that, like, see, I wanted this. I was like, is she Killer Croc? No. Like, is she Penguin? No. Is she the Joker? No. Like, is she Two-Face? No. Like, who is she, you know? And if she doesn't get revealed as one of these things, I don't care. Like,
yeah, I get that. I get that. But I didn't want this to tie into the Batman universe, really, because the Batman universe is so complex and there's so much going on. I didn't want a weekly Batman show. And also, the kid who plays Bruce Wayne kind of bugs me a little bit. And I can't tell you why. He just does. But I loved...
Because he's kind of whiny.
Yeah.
Bruce is not that way.
Exactly. So I would have loved to see the story of Jim Gordon rising through the ranks of the Gotham PD and cleaning up the streets and getting to the point where he's the commissioner and he's in charge. I would have loved to see that, because obviously, you know, like, here's one thing that I hate about the TV show. It suffers from prequelitis. Obviously, you know that Bruce Wayne isn't going to die. Obviously, you know that Jim Gordon isn't going to die. Everyone else, they've changed enough that you can kind of let them die, but they're not going to kill Riddler. They're not going to kill Penguin.
Penguin, yeah.
So I almost feel like they brought in Fish Mooney just so they could kill her, so they could have somebody with some consequence.
And in that vein, that's part of the reason I don't like her. Because I was like, I'm watching this and I don't care. I honestly do not care anything that happens to your character. And you are such a big part of it that it made it hard for me to watch it. Like, I just didn't like her.
And see, I would have loved to have seen more Carmine Falcone and how he manipulated and see Jim Gordon fighting the mob. Anyway, this isn't a Batman. This is not the Batman or the Gotham podcast.
So being that as it is, this second season I've really enjoyed. And the reason why is because now we're getting into origin stories of the Riddler, how he becomes the Riddler, origin stories of the Penguin, how he becomes the Penguin. You know, there's kind of glimpses.
I would have loved that too.
There's glimpses of like Catwoman, you know, and Selina Kyle and what's going on. And then there's glimpses of like even Bruce like figuring out stuff and like finding out why his, you know, company is ran bad, and he's looking for corruption inside. And so because now characters that I care about, and also Mooney died, spoilers. Oh,
see, I didn't know that. But I knew that from the first season. I'm like, the only reason she's here is because she's the only villain you can kill, because you know Carmine Falcone's not dead. Yeah, you know that.
That's fine. I should have said spoilers before. Maybe you should add a spoiler thing to that. But yeah, so Mooney dies, and that's kind of the end of the first season. Like, that's the big, like, oh, and it's like, great. You know, like, I was super happy. I was like, okay, now I'm going to keep watching the show. And then it was kind of like on the internet, they were like, is she really dead? And Jada Pinkett's sis said, yeah, I'm not coming back to the show. Like, I'm not.
I'm done.
Yeah. And so, like, the Penguin's kind of got his art. He's got his, you know, his army and stuff. And, like, now he's kind of the big deal. And then, you know, these other people show up. So there's kind of a war between those two and kind of a power struggle. And it's really fun. And then, you know, the Riddler is now starting to get even more and more nuts and, you know, discovering who he is and what goes on. And so it's just been so much better. The second season has just been really good. And so I've really enjoyed it. Like,
okay,
I look forward to it. I'm going to put an asterisk on this as well, but I actually, I'm going to put one more on there, and it's just going to be really quick, but I have actually really enjoyed Heroes Reborn. Like, I gave it a try just because I was like, I loved the original, right? I loved the first two seasons of Heroes. And then after, like, midway through the third, I just stopped watching because I didn't care anymore. But I think they've done a really good job on Heroes.
You know, if you can binge that show is much better binged than watching it weekly. Because I've watched it all because it's Heroes. Yeah. And I've watched every single episode of Heroes. I'm not going to say that it's the best, but it was pretty good. It was fun.
And that's
how
I feel too. Like, it's nostalgia enough. Like, it's like, oh, you got enough of the characters in there. And it's kind of going back to what made Heroes good in the first two seasons.
Yes, before the writer's strike.
Yeah. Like, and so, like, I've enjoyed it. I just thought I would throw that out there because I know a lot of people haven't even given it a chance because they're just like, Heroes, no. But I would give it a chance.
Yeah,
so I'm just going to say give it a chance.
You know, it's not the same quality and production as the original, but it's pretty good. It will fill that first or second season Heroes need. So I mean, it sucked me in after watching a couple episodes, but I tried watching it when it was just like one episode, or I guess it was the first two episodes available, and I couldn't. I was never like, oh, I got to see if there's a new episode of Heroes. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, there's like 10 episodes of Heroes. And so yeah,
that's how I did it too.
Sat down, watched them all.
It was on Hulu.
Hulu, exactly.
Like, I was watching everything else. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh yeah, I started watching that.
Yeah.
And then I got all caught up. And then I kept looking for more and I was like, oh, Really? Because it ended earlier than anything else. Yeah,
its mid-season finale was way early, and I don't know. Hopefully it'll be back soon. We're going to have a bunch of good shows in January. I'm considering starting a little separate feed for TV schedules so that we can remember when all the shows are on. Okay, so I added a section in here that you didn't have, but it's just, I picked the book that I read this year that I liked the most and the comic book that I read this year that I liked the most. And the best book, and this book came out in August 2010, so it's been a little while, but then I sat down and I listened to two of them, and that was over 100 hours of listening to listen to the two of them, is The Way of Kings. And I've mentioned that ad nauseum in previous episodes, but basically it's a high fantasy book that has a great character development, military, has a lot of military strategy in it. It's a lot of fun.
Brandon Sanderson, right?
Yes, it was written by Brandon Sanderson. So if you love worlds that are just vast and sweeping and have all sorts of rules to their magic that they use, it's a great one to look into.
He's the king of doing that. I actually have a signed copy of that book that I got at Comic-Con. And I haven't read it yet.
See, I've never listened to his stuff or read his stuff before this year. And then this year I just became addicted to it. And so I was like, oh, sweet. Brandon Sanderson always comes to Comic-Con. I'm going to go meet him. And then I think this year he was not a featured guest. So he may have been walking around. His sister is very active in the Comic-Con Facebook group, but I haven't seen him. That's Brandon Sanderson's The Way of Kings. Great book. It's, if you like Lord of the Rings, it's kind of going to go up that alley right there with some fantasy and some adventure and some action and some military strategy. Lots of things to look into there. And then the comic book, and this one came out, her first appearance was in 2013, and then her series took off in February 2014. And then I got the first trade for Christmas in 2014. And so I started reading it in 2015. This one is Miss Marvel, which is featuring not Carol Danvers like Captain Marvel, but Kamala Khan. And Kamala Khan, she is the first Muslim superhero from Marvel that is like a mainstay character. You know, so she's a 16-year-old girl from Jersey City, and it's really awesome. She has, as a character, like in the first issue, she's sitting there writing a fan fiction about the Avengers. About, okay, so if this fight happened and this, so she's writing a fan fiction. You know, she's fighting with her parents. She wants to be just a normal girl, but she's Muslim, so you know that precludes her from a lot of activity. She fights with her parents over that. And what I really love is it gives you a window into the life of G. Willow Wilson, who wrote this. And I've talked about it a couple times. So we get to see Kamala Khan become a superhero. It's kind of like early days of Spider-Man, where he has no idea what he's doing, but he's just trying to do the right thing. And, you know, now she's on the all new, all different Avengers. She is a great read. I read the first trade and I'm like, yep, that's something I have to go get. And so I went back and got all of the back issues, and I'm glad I got it early enough that I'm missing number one and number two. I could have gotten like the 12th printings, but I was like, I'm not going to worry about getting a back issue for that, but it's definitely
where is a really good place to find stuff like that. Like, I didn't think that I'd be able to get a first printing of the Star Wars. But actually Dr. Volt's,
I'll have to go check. Oh, no, I went through all of their back issues,
but you can, if you go into their store, a lot of the times they have just stuff like in their back room. Like I was really, you have a copy of this? And they're like, yeah, we just save stuff like that. And I was like, really? Like, so okay. Whenever I need to find something super crazy like that, I go to Dr. Volt's. But yeah, for like everything else, I just go to my local shop, you know, like the nerd store, Heebie-Jeebies.
Yeah, that's good to know. I might go give him a call and say, hey, if you have this, let me know. But you know, it's actually getting to be worth quite a bit of money, so maybe I should have fought a little harder to find it. So.
Yeah, that's cool though. Yeah. So the only book that I've read that came out this year was Larry Correia's book, The Son of the Black Sword, which I liked. but because it's the only book that I read that came out this year, because I was getting caught up on Dresden Files, like most of the year I was reading Dresden Files and other books and stuff. I can't really consider those.
Why not? I did.
Books. Okay. Well, okay. So if I was, I'd say Dresden Files, because I literally read like 10 of them this year.
Does it get better after the second book?
Absolutely.
Okay, because I had people tell me that this is awesome. You need to listen to these or read these. And I was like, okay. And I did too. And I was like, yeah, this is all I got in me. So.
No, yeah. They, you have, well, okay. You don't have to, but they're read by James Marsters. If you don't know who that
Spike
is,
from Buffy.
Spike from Buffy. Yeah. And he, I didn't realize that until he came to Comic-Con and said it. Like, he was like, oh yeah, I read these. And everyone was like, what? And then they were like, say Fuego. And he's like, Fuego. And I was like, wait, this is Dresden Files. He reads those? Because I honestly thought he had a British accent. Like, that was truly his voice. But he doesn't. He, you know, he's an American and he is just really good at playing a British guy. So he reads them really well. Like, he is just really good. And that makes for a good book. Son of the Black Sword was good, Larry Correia's book, but I will say that I honestly felt like it was just one huge book of character development, and there wasn't really a great like goal that needed to happen. Like, I kept waiting for something to be like, we need to go and kill this guy, or we need to go and do this, you know, like some villain to kind of pop up and be like, okay, this is kind of the point of all of this character development. And it wasn't until the very end of the book that there was a villain, like a true villain that wasn't just like, oh, this person annoys me, or oh, this is going on. And so I felt that that was like the main thing that was lacking in that book. It was great. It was written really well. The premise is really cool. But I think it's one of those books that if you really want to enjoy it, you have to wait until the other books come out so that you can continue reading.
See, I usually do that, and I always get so mad when I start a series that I'm like, oh yeah, this is a long one. It'll take me a long while to get through. And it's like, what? There's a third book? There's always a third book.
I purposely have not read any of the Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire, I think it's called, for that reason. I want it to be done before I start reading it. Because I did that with Wheel of Time. And I'm, you know, Wheel of Time, I waited years and years and years between books, and I'm just like, nope, you know what? I'll just wait until they're done. So I'm going to add, okay, so that Dresden Files, I guess, read that. I guess that would be mine, 2015, because, you know, this is the year of Dresden Files for me. As far as comic books go, I'm going to recommend, let's see, The Sandman Overture.
Ooh, that's a good one.
So Neil Gaiman
always wrote good.
A prequel to The Sandman, and it was awesome. It was really, really good. So if you don't know that that exists, go pick it up. I'm not sure if there's a trade or not or what's going on, but yeah, that's what I would say. I think it's Neil Gaiman and Letters Williams the third. It's like J.K. or J.H. Williams the third. Yeah, so it's a prequel to Sandman. If you haven't read Sandman, go take a look at that as well. It's one of the best comic book series. That it's just really good, and Neil Gaiman is a brilliant writer. So that would be my recommendation for 2015 comics. And okay. Then I've really enjoyed Star Wars too, but I think that we kind of ran over that bridge a couple times. So.
Yeah, and we will again, I'm sure. Yeah, we have a lot of listeners who are big into the Star Wars, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be. So, all right, so that's our look back to 2015. But I think it's really important that being in episode 45, we have had most of a year with you guys. Nick's jumped in recently. I've been in for every episode. But you guys have been along for the ride, and I really appreciate that. You guys, time is money, and I get that. And you guys are choosing to spend your time with us, and it makes me feel very happy to see that. I see all of the downloads happen. I know you guys don't all comment. If you want to comment, that's great. But I'm just glad that people are out there listening to this and enjoying it. Like I mentioned earlier, with the new year, it's a good time to restructure things. So if you have any suggestions, let us know, because really we do this for you guys. And thank you for being part of this journey. All right, Nick, where can people find you online?
Most social media, Nick English Art, N-I-K, English like the language, art. You can find me on most social media and my website. You can also go to pixels.com and purchase artwork there.
Thanks for listening to the Fandom Podcast. If you have any suggestions, head over to fandompodcast.com/contact and let us know what you think we should cover. And if you find any value from this show, head over to fandompodcast.com/support. There we have monetary and non-monetary ways that you can support this show. Here's looking forward to 2016.
Sorry, Batman, I slipped on the Bake Alaska.
May the fandom be with you.